League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your midweek edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. And it's a rare one today because it's me, Mark Heath, your host, and joining me, the Doctor, Stuart Watson, just a two-man pod, a rare combination. And that's because, essentially, Stewie, this is pay-per-view stuff. This is you've just realised that your mic is on or off.
It's fine.
Stewie, I want to ask you by starting this. Obviously, you just come back from Southampton Town. I've got another win, which we'll talk about in due course. But we know we've got the young guns, Bossy and AJ. They've really leaned into that since I branded them that after watching a Wham documentary. What are we, mate? You and me, the senior citizens, the old boys.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you got anything in mind? The grumpy old men.
Grumpy old men, isn't it? Which I would have railed against not too long ago, but now I think I'm easing quite smoothly into that.
We're not old, mate. We're in our prime.
Exactly. Aging like fine wine. How are you anyway, mate? You all right?
I'm good, thanks. I like the way you so blasé. Just another win for Ipswich. Whatever. Maybe, yeah, we'll get onto that in a minute. Yeah,
another win. That's what we do.
Wins, whatever.
How was your trip to Southampton? Because clearly, obviously, you're now also, I talk about your role in the group. You're the veteran leader. You're also the driver now. So you drove there and back to Sheffield Saturday.
And the then doctor, you did the driver, the candlestick maker.
It's the utility player, mate. The veteran leader. And am I right in thinking Southampton?
Stop calling me a veteran.
You went to uni in Southampton, didn't you? So it's like a...
Bournemouth.
That's
all the same. South Coast.
All the same. Yeah. How was it anyway?
It was good. Yeah. Another memorable away day for Ipswich Town, where they're racking up. We're being spoilt, aren't we? For many years, they were sort of collector's items. For a long time, we kept sort of reaching into the past for Chaplow's late winner at Watford and Noel Hunt's late winner at Charlton as kind of memorable away days. But now we've had a string of them in the space of, what, 6-7 months? But yeah, that's one that I think will live long in the memory, this one.
Yeah, well, let's kick off there. And obviously, Town winning again. 6 wins in 7 games, Stu. This is a madness. It's like that clip, isn't it? The kid after he's been to the dentist. Is this real life? It feels a bit like that. No one, even in their wildest dreams, could have predicted 6 wins out of the first 7 games, especially in terms of the teams they've played. Do you want to start with your thoughts on the game, and then we'll hear from Wes Burns what he made of it.
Yes. 20 minutes in, I was thinking this is a real step up in quality. These look like a team that have just come down from the Premier League. They weren't dominating, but you could tell that compared to Sheffield Wednesday, this was a higher class of opposition. Mm. A little bit of pressure was starting to build around 20, 30 minutes. And then Ipswich got the goal, slightly against the run of play. I'd say it had been pretty even up until that point, but if anything, it was slightly against the run of play. And from there, that home crowd turned big time. And that's where we talked about, can you get that crucial first goal? Because that was an edgy, anxious crowd off the back of losing 4-1 to Leicester at home, having been thrashed 5-0 at Sunderland prior to that. There is some early teething problems with the Russell Martin style of play, which they think they were maybe struggling to get on board with as a home crowd. And for a 10-minute spell, Ipswich were bang on top. Probably should have added a second. Didn't. Familiar story from Sheffield Wednesday. Didn't get that killer second when they were on top. Okay, the momentum's going to turn back at some point. It did. Can you dig in? Can you see it out? Can you manage the game? yes was the answer to all those questions. Ipswich have got some more strings to their bow now. And yeah, memorable scenes at the end as once again a packed away end was able to celebrate with the players all as one. Brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, it is again a madness, isn't it? Southampton in the Premier League, Town in League One last season. What was it? You say the 20-man squad Southampton was worth, what was it, 80 million, 90 million, something like that, compared to Town?
Yeah, I think the starting 11 was 80 million. The bench was another 60 million, something ridiculous like that in terms of transfer fees paid. Ipswich's will be less than 10. And you just had to sort of start counting through the number of Premier League appearances in that Southampton squad compared to Ipswich's. There was a real disparity there between the two. I think we shouldn't lose sight of that. I think that was an important context after Ipswich lost to Leeds to kind of point out how far Ipswich had come, 4 years in League One. Let's not forget that. They have no right to be really going to somewhere like Southampton and winning, but they did because stability, coaching, everything that we know, the unity, everything that's gone into this Ipswich team is what's given them the edge in these sort of games. It's another one that could have gone either way. A lot of these Championship games we're talking about, if key moments had swung a different way and stuff like that. But there's a reason they keep coming the right side of these, because if you do all the right things, you've got a chance of kind of edging these sort of games. And that's why they keep tipping more often than not in the favour of Ipswich Town.
You can say it if you want to. You can say
I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm not saying it.
Let's hear from Wes Burns what he made of it all.
Wes, a team that played in the Premier League last year, so for you to come up from League One and to put in a performance like that and get a win like that must be pretty special.
Yeah, for us to come away from home, you know, back-to-back, you know, Wednesday and now tonight and grind out 1-0 wins, it's a sign of a good team. You know, we've come here tonight, we stuck to our principles, stuck to our, you know, disciplined shape, and we knew that we could hurt them if we shut up shop, and that was the end result.
Yeah, I mean, you watched that game a little bit, I think, on Friday night when they lost 4-1 here to Leicester. Did that kind of translate to what you expected from them tonight?
Well, their manager's obviously been at MK Dons and Swansea and now obviously Southampton, so we knew that, you know, the structures and the way that they play were going to be very similar to those. So we knew, you know, that very possession-based team, you know, you got players rolling in, you know, full-backs rolling into midfield, so we knew that blocking the middle and not letting any passes through the middle of us would be very key tonight. So we tried to make sure that everything sort of went down the sides and we could defend from there. And I think we've done that, you know, for the whole game. And when you keep clean sheets and you've got the quality that we have up front, you're always going to, you know, have a chance of winning.
Mm. Goal comes, I guess, a little bit against the run of play. Obviously, they've had some good chances there, but, I mean, a fantastic moment in his first start for Amari Hutchinson.
Yeah, really, really proud for him. You know, he's come in from Chelsea and he's, you know, he's got his head down and he's worked his socks off, and he deserves his start tonight and he deserves his goal. You know, it topped off a brilliant away performance.
And that is obviously the perfect segue into talking about the match winner, Stewie. Amari Hutchinson started probably slightly surprising in place of Nathan Broadhead, got his first senior goal. What do we make of this young man? Because clearly he's come from Chelsea with a lot of hype, a lot of highlights, and he's been kind of up and down. Very good in pre-season and not had too many chances yet. And we've talked about him maybe needing to improve his decision-making, but he made some good decisions on Tuesday night.
He did, yeah. In terms of the starting 11, that I was surprised by that. I think most people predicted Hurst to come back in for Ladapo. We knew Williams would replace the injured Davis at left-back. With McKenna talking about squad rotation coming into play with the midweek fixtures now starting, Taylor for Luongo wasn't a massive surprise. But Hutchinson for Broadhead, I think, caught a lot of us out because I thought if any of the wingers was going to be swapped out, it would have been Wes Burns, because sent home from Wales duty with a hamstring problem, came off with a tight hamstring at Hillsborough a few days earlier. But it was Nathan Broadhead who dropped out. And again, this is a bit of a McKenna masterclass coming up with a bespoke game plan. You heard Wes Burns there talking about the inverted fullbacks sort of rolling inside, everyone trying to copy Manchester City these days. He obviously felt that having sort of two more dynamic wingers, Wes Broadhead is more of a kind of a floats around silky technical player, but he's not as dynamic as Hutchinson and Burns. So he obviously felt having two of those sort of more athletic wide men could deal with that issue. They were very narrow. I don't think I've ever seen Wes Burns play as narrow as he has there. Normally he's got paint on his boots, he's out wide, he's the outlet, but he was tucked right inside with Amari Hutchinson cutting off those passing lanes, forcing them out wide, and then Ipswich dealt with those crosses into the box more often than not. So that's the first point there, is that Kieran McKenna once again has looked at the opposition, worked out what he wants to do, and they look like a team that knew the game plan and how are they going to execute it.
And what about Amari then? So it's obviously a big occasion for him away from home, and he gets the goal that wins the game, and he gets it in a unexpected way, I guess. It's a goal that would make any manager happy because of the way it comes about. It comes from hard work and the press and putting a tackle in and then making things happen. And yeah, fantastic from the young lad.
Yeah, I'll be honest. When I saw him first in pre-season, I did use the term show pony when I was talking to Alex and other colleagues when we were watching the games. Very flash, got some step overs, quite skillful, but young lad from the Premier League.
Hmm.
Decision making at times, which I think he still needs to work on. There's still one or two times where he doesn't necessarily pick the final ball, but has he got the big question mark with a player like that is when they've come from a sort of a Premier League academy bubble, are they going to get stuck into the blood and thunder of men's football? Can they do the ugly stuff? Can they do the hard graft? And by all accounts, Kieran McKenna had those same doubts and reservations and that same conversation with him in the summer. If you've read his quotes post-match, he talked about, in no uncertain terms, he was told that he needs to do that part of the game and he can be very good at it. And that's exactly what he did for the goal. Southampton had started the game quite more direct than I anticipated. We were expecting the sort of Russell Martin play out from the back. They did hit the channels a few times, but as the game wore on, they started to take the goal kick short and Ipswich started to realise that they could go and press that and force mistakes. And it's an Amari Hutchinson crunching slide tackle on, I think it was Shay Charles trying to step out from the back, gets it back off Chaplin. Want to give a shout out to George Hurst, who I didn't probably fully appreciate at the time, but he does really well to kind of dummy that ball and leave it for Hutchinson, and it's a really nice finish on the stretch in off the post.
And we can actually hear, as you just teased, should be from Kieran McKenna, a really nice line from him you got after the game about that very chat with young Amari in the summer.
You know, a great goal for Amari's development, to be honest. We're joking with him down there, but you know, from where he started a couple of months ago, for him to score his first professional goal from a sliding tackle, I don't think he would have believed that would have been, you know, part of his repertoire. So great, you know, indicator of the progress that he's making, great indicator of the, you know, the group that he's developing in and the standards and the discipline that he's learning here. And alongside the goal, his all-round defensive performance was excellent. And of course, then he showed his quality and his bravery on the ball as well.
Yeah, from what we've seen of him, we knew he was a tricky, skillful young player with Premier League pedigree. But did you say to him, we need to see the other side of your game as well if you're going to be coming into senior football with us? Is that something you spoke to him about?
Yeah, really clearly, and I think he would attest to that. But you know, the part of the reason why we spoke about that is because I think his capacity to do it is incredible, and you know, that probably surprised him. But when I met him over the summer, we looked at some video and I told him that I think he can be absolutely outstanding out of possession. He's got the endurance to do it, he's got the speed, he's got the agility to move his feet, and I think he can be, you know, top class out of possession. So I said to him, if he doesn't utilise that part of the game, if he doesn't come here and develop that part of the game, it would be a waste of his talent, to be honest, because there's not many wingers who've got, you know, the ability to do that side of the game naturally as well as what he does. So yeah, it's great that he's developing on that, but again, that probably does then reflect on the, you know, the group and the culture that he's coming into and the demands that the players put on each other. And he's slotted into that well now, and he's developing nicely.
It's lovely stuff, Stu. And I love the man management from McKenna. on play there? Because we know from numerous conversations you boys have had with the players that he focuses on what players can do, tells you what you're good at, and that's why he uses you in certain situations. But in Omari's case, a young lad who's coming, probably thinking, as you say, he's a bit of a, I am a flashy Dan. I can do this, that, and the other. But then McKenna says to him, do you know what? I think you could be really good at the ugly side of the game. And immediately then you're like, could I? Do you know what? I bloody could, you know. I just love that man management.
It's great, isn't it? Yeah, I'm sure there's probably some cases where you think, actually, that's not your forte and it's probably never going to be your forte. Mm. So we'll find ways to kind of hide that part of your game and focus on the stuff that you are really good at. You're never going to turn certain players into certain things. But in Omari's case, with his age and his physical attributes, like you say, you tell somebody, yeah, you've made him feel good about that. It's not the old school, you need to get stuck in, son. You can't just make him, the way he described that, you can be top, 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 to use McKenna's phrase, at the off-the-ball stuff as well. And, you know, he's now got evidence for that with his first senior goal. And it wasn't just that moment. He got stuck in plenty of other areas too. And when Kieran McKenna says the standards that the group sets, the rest of them to a man really got stuck in. And that's what I've liked about the championship journey so far. I think we heard in an early interview, was it Massimo Luongo, who talked about them being shown the stats from Burnley last season. Got all the plaudits for fantastic football on their way to winning the championship title, but they were shown the stats on how much running they did, how many tackles they made, all that sort of stuff. And we know that they're a good football team, Ipswich, but they're showing they're willing to really roll up their sleeves. And this was a different type of performance. This was closer to a low block in terms of the way they sort of sat in and defended. We talked about sort of being a bit more narrow and organised. And just some really big tackles in there as well, and everyone just getting stuck in. It was great.
I wish my wife would take the McKenna approach to management, focus on what I could be good at rather than pointing out that I'm terrible at stacking the dishwasher, for example. Why is it, Stu, that you have to stack the dishwasher? I'm not sure you have a dishwasher, but people can relate to this. I stack the dishwasher how I want to stack it. It doesn't have to be the same way as the wife does it. Why is that an issue? Have you encountered this kind of thing in your relationship with Mrs. Watson?
I don't have a dishwasher, but there is talk of two different types of people with that. I would be I'd take the McKenna methodical approach.
Yeah.
I want some nice spacing. I might do a little pre-rinse beforehand, and I would get quite cross. So you would just chuck it all in?
Yeah, I'm a kind of man. Schizophrenic. It fits there. What's the problem? That kind of thing.
That would annoy me.
You would get on very well with my wife if that's your approach to dishwasher stacking, my friend. In terms of other things to talk about from the game, obviously we talked about Omari there. He did very well. How about guys who came in? Jack Taylor, a big game for him as well. What did you make of him?
It's his first game in after a thing. It was a bit loose at times. More to come from him, I would say. They looked better when Massimo came on for the final half an hour. But he's going to bring some different qualities and attributes, and I think in terms of sort of goal threat. But it was a high quality game for him to kind of step into and make his full debut. He'll be better for that hour. But I can't sit here and give you rave reviews on Jack Taylor from this performance. But he'll feel better for getting that hour under his belt.
How about Brandon Williams? Because he has had an especially torrid start, certainly his first few minutes in a town kit. And now he's coming, he's going to have to play for the foreseeable, probably, with Leif Davis's ankle injury. Sounding like it's not going to solve itself soon. How did he look in this one?
Yeah, good. Different to Leif Davis. I don't think he's going to give you that same sort of attacking outlet and assists output as Leif Davis, but he's physical, he's athletic. The two fullbacks weren't majorly adventurous in this game, as they gave Southampton a bit of respect. But he was solid and did his job.
In terms of the game as a whole, then, Stu, obviously it's a great win, and two back-to-back 1-0 wins on the road should never be sniffed at. But there have been chances in both games where Town could have killed the game off. Is that something that is a concern? I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, no, it's not, because they're still creating the chances. Is that what you're going to say?
I am.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, our photographer Steve Waller came away from Sheffield Wednesday sort of going, oh, I could have got some more goals. I think that was more the photographer side just wanting more things to capture. But
photographers moan about anything.
Yeah, they do, anything to moan about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did say, well, they scored three against Cardiff in the previous game. They'd scored three against Leeds in the game before that. I think they're the top goal scorers in English football this calendar year. I'm not going to start sitting here saying I'm worried about their lack of goals. There are days where you don't kill it off. They're always going to create enough chances to score at least one. I'd rather focus on the fact that they've got back to keeping the clean sheets, of which there have been many during the McKenna era. They were starting to, it was that week with the Reading game in between the Cardiff and Leeds one where a few goals were starting to be shipped. But so to get a couple of clean sheets on the road is really encouraging. They had to work hard for both of those clean sheets from front to back.
Do you want to talk a bit about that? Because I know you wrote in your Stu says that was one of the most satisfying things about the game for you, was the way they saw the game out. And clearly 1-0 on the road against a team like Southampton with bristling with attacking firepower. It's never going to be easy to navigate it, but they managed it pretty. They managed it pretty well, didn't they? Even with seven minutes added on?
Yeah, and I didn't feel that nervous watching it. You're obviously kind of in the back of your mind thinking something could happen out of nothing, but it never felt like they were massively under the cosh. The periods where Southampton did have a bit of pressure, which is always going to happen, I felt like they were comfortable in what they were doing, but it's on and off the ball. I like the fact that they retain a sort of an outlet and a counter attack, and they're able to sort of attack, can be the best form of defence at times. They don't get too deep and just try and sort of shut up shop, because I think that can be suicidal if you try and do that too soon. But they're also quite comfortable at times, knowing when, okay, we're going to have to roll our sleeves up and head a few balls out of the box and stuff like that. Just organized, physical. Sam Morsy was just stepping in so many times and making things. People have shared the videos of a couple of particularly big tackles. Wes Burns, I think he mentioned in that clip earlier, racing back and sort of a leaping off the ground slide tackle from behind where he had to win the ball. There was a similar one from Clark. Clark and Ryan Fraser sort of grabbing each other by the shirt after the ball went off by the advertising hoardings. There was just fire in the belly of this performance. We've already mentioned Hutchinson and people like that getting stuck in. They're looking a well-rounded football team in so many aspects at the moment, Ipswich.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about the bigger picture in a minute, but I just want to finish this chat, Stu. You mentioned on Twitter, I think you put another one kind of filing the memorable away days for Town. Under McKenna, there's been a lot now. I mean, where would you rank this one among the ones we've seen? Clearly, I guess Barnsley sticks out, doesn't it? The Bolton and the Derby ones last season. Where would you put this one?
Right up there. I don't think it tops Barnsley, because Barnsley was a special night. That was the moment that you knew several years of hurt, 4 years in League One, had come to an end. You knew that was it. That was job done at Barnsley that night. This one is obviously earlier in the season and it hasn't got the same sort of stakes to it, but it could be one that we look back on and go, that was a night where we realised that they are the real deal in the Championship. I'm going to stop short of saying that just yet, because we're still early on, but it felt like a significant scalp to go to Southampton. McKenna keeps talking about these little progress markers. He's quite big on improving on something last time around, and you know, whether it be we haven't won at Hillsborough in the last two visits, let's try and go and win there now. They did. We weren't able to beat a relegated side in Leeds. Can we do something at Southampton? They did. So right up there, maybe just underneath Barnsley, I would say.
Very nice. Any behind-the-scenes stuff? I know that you shared that the press rooms changed quite a bit since you were last at Southampton.
Yeah, it's changed a lot since we went there. It was nearly 10 years ago in the FA Cup, wasn't it? In the playoff season when Darren Ambrose scored that really good header to take it to a replay. It's had you can tell it's a club that's been in the Premier League for a decade. That's maybe a little insight into how much Portman Road will have to change again and improve if Ipswich can take the step up to the top flight. A huge press room, loads of different options for food, view out onto the docks, which was quite nice.
Did I see they even had branded Southampton sweets to give you?
Yes, they did. We were very spoiled. We're from going last year to that. This was from going to places and barely getting a bottle of water and some working Wi-Fi and a room to work in. This was different. There was an option of a curry with naan bread and bhajis and all the sides, pasta if you wanted that as a second option. Some nice little desserts as well. That was nice.
Finally, Stu, the treatment you deserve. You can get used to this.
Yeah, it's a hard life, isn't it? Yeah, it was very hospitable, Southampton. It was nice.
Excellent. Right then. So Town have won again, 6 wins in 7. I want to talk about the bigger picture now, Stewie, because if you look at the table, yes, it's still very early. Ipswich Town are third on 18 points. This time last season, the top of the table team was Sheffield United, and they had 14 points. There's also now a 5-point gap between Town and fourth place already. And that fourth place team being Sunderland, who obviously Town have already beaten. So when you look at the bigger picture, Stewie, it's hard not to feel pretty bloody good about things, isn't it?
Are you saying they're going up?
I'm not quite saying that, but as I said at the start of the show, is this real life? No one would have predicted this after 7 games. To have won 6 of those and to be sitting where they are and already having that gap on fourth place is pretty extraordinary, old friend.
It is, yeah. And I'm still pinching myself on a daily basis about quite how ridiculously well this is all going. They're giving themselves a really solid platform, aren't they? And talk about the table really taking shape after 10 games. We'll be closing in on that fairly soon if Ipswich are still in a position that they are now. We'll be starting to get towards being able to say it's likely they're going to be in the mix if they can continue this for another 4 or 5 games.
Well, if you look at it, I mean, I think playoffs last season was 69 points. So Town are already more than a quarter of the way there, which is, again, crazy after 7 games. I mean, you couldn't... Yeah, anyway, I do want to ask you, Stu, though, about the identity of this team. Because we knew what Town were last season. Certainly when they started on that run, which ended up with them getting promoted, they were a team that were going to dominate possession, going to pick you apart. And if you try and play with them, they're going to rip you apart. But we've seen several different ways of winning already this season from Town. And generally speaking, I haven't got the stats to hand, but I'd imagine that in most games this season, they haven't had the lion's share of possession. And we've seen more of a kind of blitzkrieg counter-attack sort of team that literally can... hit you on the break and score at lightning speed. I know it's only 7 games in, but can you kind of put into words what this team are maybe compared to what they were last season? What do you think their identity is?
Yeah, certainly very different. And I think, again, that's the mark of McKenna and his coaching staff, that they have been able to adapt to different challenges. There was I still look back to Valentine's Day, that 0-0 draw at Bristol Rovers, and everyone was having a bit of a wobble at that stage. And I think they adapted a little bit then, and I think they started to go a little bit more direct at times. Yes, they still had the possession principles and wanting to dominate games and be the dominant team will always underpin it, but I think they've added some different strings to their bow and they've morphed more, certainly since being promoted, into more of this counter-attacking, fast counter-attacking side. Still want to start attacks from the back, still want to draw people in. It's a bit cat and mouse. And then bang, 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 they can be at your goal in a few passes. Mm. So Yeah, probably if you had to label them now, you'd probably be calling them more of a counter-attacking side, with those kind of possession principles still always the base values of the team. But yeah, they're always adapting to different levels, different opponents. That's what makes them so good.
In that regard, and are they something of a chameleon side, Stu? They're capable of changing their spots, if you like. They're kind of approach depending on what's required in each game.
Yeah. I think so. I think that's fair. We're getting back towards first half of last season when we talked about these bespoke game plans and Caden Jackson, for example, being called upon for certain scenarios. I mean, we're talking a lot about Omari Hutchinson. I wonder if Caden Jackson was fit, whether that Hutchinson debut would have even happened, because I think he might have been the first choice to play on the left. Had picked up a knee injury at Hillsborough, but chameleon is probably a good description for him.
Excellent. And with success, Stu, and I've done a bit this morning with Town being standing alone with Man City in English football in this calendar year as the only two sides who've won 20 games in this calendar year, which again is remarkable, isn't it, when you think back to where we were not too long ago and losing the way they lost at Charlton, and then they lost at Barrow in the FA Cup, and it was dreadful. And now they're literally up there with Man City. And actually, if you look at the form table across Europe in their last 20 games, they're actually above Man City on goal difference. It's crazy. And with success, obviously, will come more and more noise, more and more eyes, more and more attention on the man who's coordinating, orchestrating that success, Kieran McKenna. And we saw it yesterday with Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer talking on one of their numerous podcasts they do together. They were asked, who's the best young up-and-coming manager outside the Premier League? And both of them said, Kieran McKenna. Thoughts on this, Stu? Because we're going to have to get used to this, especially as we get into sacking season in the Premier League, October onwards, particularly around Christmas. McKenna is going to be linked with every bloody job going, isn't he?
Yeah, we knew that even in the summer when Leicester and Celtic were coming up. But
now he's doing it in the second tier. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, anything you do in League One, I think, goes under the radar. We're seeing that with the international call-ups now. You can be superb in League One, but it just doesn't maybe get the recognition that it sometimes deserves, with people like Burgess and Morsi now getting back into international setups. And it's the same with managers now. You start doing it at the top end of the Championship, it's going to draw some more attention. November time is normally when the heads start to roll and jobs become available. You still feel like the big ambitions of the club match the big ambitions of the manager, and that the two have still got a long way to go on this journey together at the moment. So we'll see, won't we, what jobs become available, and whether there'll be a tipping point somewhere at some point that will turn the manager's head. And I'm sure, and I know Ipswich have got succession plans and are aware of that themselves, that they'll be well aware of sort of the managerial market and not being caught cold on a situation like that. But I mean, hopefully we're talking, you know, months, hopefully years. Down the track, aren't we, for that conversation?
Ashton's data dashboard will already be worrying, I'm sure. Would you agree with that comment from those two guys? Obviously, they've done a bit in the game. They know what they're talking about. Best manager outside the Premier League. I mean, Michael Richards, who was on the same podcast, said Liam Rose Senior.
Yeah, I know. He's highly rated at Haaland, what he's doing there. Ryan Lowe is doing fantastically at Preston at the moment. Stephen Schumacher, highly rated at Plymouth. So it's a real spectrum of managers, isn't there? Obviously, Neil Warnock looks like he's finally done with management. Roy Hodgson's obviously had a health scare recently, but still going with Crystal Palace. But it just shows you there's a whole way of sort of approaching management from young to old. But it does feel like there's a younger breed coming through and changing things a little bit. And I've felt and known for quite a long time that Kieran McKenna is something special, and that he's going the way he talks, even from day one, that sort of, he's got that steely look in his eye that he knows that he's good, and he's not arrogant in the way he talks about his ambitions, but I just think he's got that underpinning confidence about him that he's learnt his trade. He balks at the idea that he's some kind of rookie manager. If people talk about him being last year, it's your first season in senior management, you're a young rookie boss. Yes, he's young, but he's, you know, compared to people that have just hung up their boots and starting management, he's got a 10, 15 year head start in terms of learning coaching on some of these guys. And he's as he keeps saying, he's been Champions League, Premier League assistant manager. He's felt comfortable at that level, and that's where he wants to get back to.
What is it that impresses you most about McKenna, Stewie? Because I think the more we get into his kind of reign, I think obviously he's clearly very tactically astute, very good coach, able to improve players. But I think the more I think about it, is the man management, the kind of culture that he's created around the side, where even if you're not playing, you feel very much part of it. And no one feels like they're, you know, the old school management way of just being yelled at and told you're not good enough. You feel like that's not something that happens at Town now.
He's a top class communicator is the thing that I would say is at the very top of his attributes. Obviously, he's seen as a very good coach and technically, tactically, is obsessed with the game. People talk about him being methodical and that, but you can have all of that and it's useless if you can't communicate it in a way that's relatable to your players. And that is the thing that impresses me the most, is the way that he is able to communicate to the wider public via the media, his thought processes, and obviously the way he can communicate with his players as well. That I would say is the top of his attributes, because without it, all the other stuff is no good.
Is someone trying to communicate with you, by the way, Stu? Your phone is going mental. Is there some breaking news? You've forgotten to pick up the misses? Yeah.
No, it's all right. Just some nonsense. Just some WhatsApp fans. Group chats going off.
Fans. Oh, yeah. WhatsApp. Okay. Right then. That's good. I enjoyed talking about the bigger picture. And now let's get back into the smaller picture, Stu, which is this Saturday. Blackburn Rovers coming to visit Portman Road. Another two-game week with Wolves visiting on Tuesday in the Carabao Cup. That's exciting as well, isn't it? We'll talk about that in due course. But Blackburn Rovers coming to Portman Road, Stu, a side that were good last season, flirting with the playoffs. Not started that well this season. 12th at the moment. They've just lost 3-1 at home to Sunderland. And not too long ago, a couple of games ago, they got tonked 3-0 at Plymouth. How are we feeling about this game then? I mean, I guess we go into every game now thinking it's a game that Dan very much probably favourites to win.
Yeah, I mean, talk quickly about Blackburn, but ultimately this conversation will end. It doesn't really matter about the opposition because it's about what Ipswich are, the confidence that Ipswich are instilling in us. And that will be the ultimate takeaway. But Blackburn are a side that have finished just outside the playoffs a couple of seasons in a row, 8th and then 7th last season. You mentioned some of their defeats, but they have won 1-0 at Watford. They did beat Middlesbrough at home recently. They beat West Brom on the opening day. So they've had some decent results in there as well. Bit of a mixed bag. But they'll be coming to Portman Road without much in the way of strikers. They've lost obviously their talisman in Ben Brereton-Diaz, who's gone off to Villarreal. Bradley Dack as well, who's been a bit of a goal getter from midfield over several years, departed in the summer as well. And their manager John Dahl Thomason has been making some veiled comments about sort of the lack of backing in the transfer market, some frustrations over the summer. So lots of homegrown players in their side. Sammy Smodix is probably the name that jumps off the page. Obviously, ex-Peterborough Colchester has scored and been a bit of a thorn in Ipswich's side previously. But it will be another typically competitive championship game, I'm sure. But it's how can you not feel good and confident about Ipswich at the moment with what they're doing?
We should talk, actually. I didn't mention it in the Southampton chat, but in terms of the you got an injury update, didn't you, after the game from McKenna about Davis and Jackson, which seems to fit now as well as we look into the weekend. So just brings up to speed with what you said there, because it sounds like Davis, although it might not be, you know, kind of months and months and season ending sort of stuff, it does sound like it's going to keep him out for a little while.
Yeah, hard to know. They've been sort of little micro updates on Leif Davis since Sheffield Wednesday. The sort of first 48 hours, couldn't really say a great deal because you're waiting for the swelling to go down before the scan can really sort of reveal the true damage there. But the latest after the game on Tuesday night is that they don't think it's very, very serious, was kind of the update on that. But it's not to say he's going to suddenly be available to play in the next few games, I wouldn't have thought. So that's Leif Davis. Caden Jackson had a bit of a knee problem after the game at Sheffield Wednesday. Initially, they thought that was a bad one. They were worried about that. But thankfully, the scan again has shown that there's no structural damage, was the quote on Caden. So we'll see if he's available for the weekend. The squad is certainly going to get tested to the limit. That was one of the big takeaways from Tuesday night, is that we knew this starting 11, which was well settled, was a good one. But how deep was the squad? I know people were going, have they really added enough quality to this team? There was a lot of talk about, they haven't upgraded the starting 11 after the transfer window shut. Well, Hutchinson's now come in, and I think people have realised that he's a player that's ready to make an impact. Jack Taylor, okay, wasn't incredible on Tuesday night, but I think he's going to have some qualities to bring. I thought both people like Dominic Ball and Marcus Harness came on and got to the pace of the game really well. Don Ball came on at right back and did well. I thought Harness, who could have been feeling a little bit sorry for himself, someone that was involved more often than not last season, has kind of drifted even out of the match day squad of late. For him to come on and make an impact was good. And that's just a reminder that all of these players are going to have a role to play. So I'm sure there'll be some knocks and niggles after two long away trips. They put a lot into those 2-1-0 wins. It'll be interesting to see what sort of team starts the game on Saturday.
I enjoyed the picture, by the way, that Town put out of the ex-Pompey players after beating Southampton on Tuesday night, the four of them there. We saw, obviously, I should mention Dane Scarlett as well. We got to see a little bit of him as well. Was there enough to kind of form an opinion on him, Stu?
Yeah, decent little cameo for him towards the end. Some nice little touches, showed that he was prepared to do the hard running as well. We talked about sort of defence starting from the top. Ipswich are never going to be, I don't think, the way they're set up to be based around having a 20-goal lead striker. They're a bit of more of a facilitator, someone who's just constantly charging down the goalkeeper and stretching the defence, which creates that space in behind for the Tens, Chaplins and Hutchinsons and people to kind of operate, and Broadhead and the like. So, a decent little cameo for him. He's another one that's going to have a role to play going forward. So, one player we haven't mentioned, actually, in looking back before we move on from Southampton, is the goalkeeper, Hagki, who once again came up with a clutch save at a big moment in the second half, just as Southampton were trying to get back at Ipswich, find an equaliser. One of the few times they were able to get through the middle of the pitch, he's come out quick, made himself big, and took the full force of a Shea Adams shot, I think, right in the kisser. And he's been remarkable, Vaz, since stepping in for Christian Walton, and allied with his ability to play out from the back. I wasn't sure what he was going to be like aerially. That would be the big question mark. Can he match Christian in that respect? Well, there were some big punches, one big catch, a brave dive at the feet in the six-yard box as well. There's going to be a decision to be made there when Christian is back fit. We're talking about him being back diving around on the training pitch, so it might be sooner rather than later, but there's certainly going to be no rush to make that change, that's for sure.
That's a genuine conversation, isn't it, that we're going to have coming conversation, a serious conversation. I look forward to having it. But in terms of this weekend, Stu, we know obviously it sounds like Davis is going to be out, so Williams will continue to fill in there. You'd imagine, wouldn't you, that Luongo would come back in for Taylor and Broadhead for Hutchinson. You see any other kind of changes?
Luongo in midfield, yes, definitely. Yeah. I think they'll go back to that. Depends. I'm sure there'll be some people that have that are carrying some bits and pieces that we won't know about, but assuming everyone's fit, as well as Amari did on Saturday, I think, you know, I think it will be Broadhead back in, no doubt about it. I think he's someone whose best moments have come at Portman Road. Maybe this is more his sort of game. So you would have thought that will be the change. Don't know. How's Wes Burns? You know, we talked about his hamstring earlier in that. I thought he was really good on Tuesday night. He'd have been right up there in terms of my sort of pick of players. But is it time to dip him out? And then if it is, maybe you could play Hutchinson on that side. Yeah. Is Jackson okay to play? Don't know. But you just know that I think we're in a position where you feel like you can trust whoever is called upon, and you trust whatever game plan Kieran McKenna comes up with.
Mm. Right then, let's do a prediction, Stu. I appreciate it's Thursday morning. So there's a lot that can happen between then and or now and then. We don't know, as you say, lots of unknowns around Knox and stuff. We'll get more from Kieran hopefully tomorrow on that. I am riding a really bad run of form on predictions. You are as well. We are actually propping up the table as the young guns like to remind us. We both said 2-2 draw, didn't we, on Tuesday? And Roscoe, unbelievably, having said 1-0, and I thought complete nonsense, got it right. So he's now stretched his lead on us. What do you reckon for Saturday?
I feel like I should just keep predicting wins because not try and mess about with this anymore and try and predict when it's going to end. Just keep predicting wins. 2-0 Ipswich.
Oh, you bastard. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. I like 2-0. I like 2-0.
Okay. Well, we'll both go with that. Maybe we'll pick different goal scorers.
Go on. You say yours first. Actually, I'll say mine because you said the score. I'll say George Hurst.
Okay.
I think most people will say Chaplin or probably Broadhead, which I thought was the way I'd go all season, to be honest. But I'm going to say Hurst. He needs a goal, doesn't he? So let's hope he gets one Saturday.
Yeah. I feel like it's between Broadhead and Chaplin. And I'll go with, he feels like he's been a man for Portman Road. So fresh from not playing in midweek, I'll go with Nathan Broadhead.
Okay. So we're both saying 2-0. You're saying Broadhead. I'm saying George Hurst. We'll obviously share the predictions across the group as we get closer to the game, and the boys no doubt will have more chance of getting it right than we do. Start picking up.
Hot take though, Mark, a Connor Chaplin long range chip has got to come at some point, hasn't
it?
Do you remember he hit the bar from like the halfway line Sunderland, in pre-season? Sunderland, chip the goalkeeper, hit the bar there. He did this, I think he hit one the post at, in the Felixstowe game early in pre-season from near the halfway line. He's been having a few of those. Hits a woodwork again with a little chip.
Why don't we do that as a hot take then? If Connor Chaplin scores a chip, because they're always audacious, aren't they?
Yeah.
An audacious chip, I reckon you should get 10 points, Jim.
I'm not sure about changing the rules, but I thought I'd just chuck it out there. It feels like one of those coming. I've also got another theory that Connor is soon to become a dad. I think it's any time soon, actually. I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago and he said it was near. I always feel like, I don't know what it is, a bit of adrenaline and excitement about becoming a father for the first time. I've noticed over the years that players up their games around then. I think a little Connor Chaplin goal rush is coming around this period when, you can see it already, the baby celebrations, can't you?
Kind of logic would kind of suggest that should be the opposite thing, Stu, because obviously
should be.
Athletes need sleep and recovery in that, and you don't get, obviously I wouldn't know because I've chosen not to procreate, but I'm led to believe you don't get a lot of sleep around the birth of a young child, so it would seem to be counterintuitive that their performance would increase after.
It does, but I think, I don't know, something sort of chemically goes on. I don't know whether it's something switches in your mind that you're now a protector, provider, although genuinely, seriously, all those things sort of change in your mind, and it sort of I think it translates into kind of an increase in athletic performance. So
I like it.
I know Connor's really excited by that, and he's having the time of his life. He's having a ball at the moment, and he like we talked about the Portsmouth stuff earlier, that was shushing the crowd because he'd got a bit of stick as a Portsmouth boy. I think he's soaking all of this in at the moment and enjoying it for what it's worth. So that's good to see. Top shithousery from Ipswich as well, posting the picture of all the Pompey boys afterwards. The fans as well. One of my favourite moments from Tuesday night was Southampton did a bit of a half-assed rendition of their kind of Saints go marching in, and Ipswich just changed it to Town go marching in and sang it louder and owned it more, which was top shithousery as well.
Everything's bloody good, isn't it? Speaking of bloody good, Stu, I watched Norwich Leicester last night. I don't know if you see any of that, but Leicester look good, man. They've got some really good players.
Dewsbury Hall looks a player, doesn't he?
Dewsbury Hall, absolutely. I mean, he didn't start, but when he came on, he was just running the show. And the left winger, Mavadidi, Steffi Mavadidi, he is a proper baller. Won the penalty with a ridiculous challenge. They look very, very good indeed. And Norwich, to be fair, you know, Norwich are obviously going to have a decent season as well. Liam Gibbs, foreman of this parish, played, didn't do a lot, has to be said. And Jonathan Rowe, you know, they're kind of young wonder kid. He got brought off at half time, which I was quite surprised about. No injury there. But Town against Leicester.
Ashley Barnes has done his knee, isn't he? Crucial, yeah. Talking about. So that's a bit of a blow for them.
Yeah. Leicester, mate. Leicester Town, that's going to be a really, really interesting game. Because obviously Leicester are playing out from the back. Their keeper, by the way, is superb at this feat. So that's going to be a very, very interesting game when that comes around. A real litmus test there for Town. But you wouldn't bet against them passing it the way they're playing at the moment. I've got to ask you as well, Stu, you're wearing a golf shirt. You looking forward to the Ryder Cup?
Love the Ryder Cup.
Yeah,
I love the Ryder Cup.
Have you watched much golf recently? Because this new lad, Åberg, isn't there? Åberg. You familiar with him? This lad who's come from the university scene in America and is going to play in a Ryder Cup without having even played in a major?
I haven't followed it that closely, if I'm honest, to be honest. No,
he's one of these kind of new breed of, what's the word? Winning machines. He's very, very exciting. I'm definitely... I think the Ryder Cup's up there, I think, with the best sporting events, full stop, don't you?
That would be on a bucket list, I think, for me to go and watch one at some point.
Yeah. Have you ever watched professional golf, been to like events and stuff? Because seeing the top lads strike the ball is kind of awe-inspiring. The speed.
No, I haven't actually, no.
Yeah. I went to watch the one they had at Woburn. I went a couple of years on the bounce and saw this is when the likes of Poulter, Colin Montgomery and Lee Westwood were kind of in their pomp. And seeing them hit the ball, mate, like as someone who's had a frustrating hack around the course quite a lot of times. I know you're a bit more of a golfer, but it's so smooth. And that the power they, you know, when you see something which is just kind of awe-inspiring and it's so simple and they make it look so easy, but the thwack as they hit the ball, like a gun going off, seriously impressive, mate. What are you playing off at the moment?
I'm a hacker, mate. Yeah, no. Yeah. I've been playing for years, and I still want to break 100. That's where I'm at. I just don't play enough. It's not like riding a bike where
you've got to commit. I
play once every like 4, 5, 6 months, and it's like I'm just starting again. And then I'm time poor. You rock up, barely do a warm up. But there'll always be 2 or 3 really good shots in there that just sort of drag.
And that's enough, isn't it? That's enough. One good shot is like, I can do this. I can actually play this game. That's what makes it so infuriating. Have we told the story on the podcast before, Stu, when you were working in a golf store and Liam Gallagher swaggered in? Have we told that?
Probably, yeah. I think so. Yeah, Liam Gallagher. Tell it again. Who was his
Patsy Kensit at the time? Is it Patsy Kensit?
The one from All Saints.
Oh, Appleton, Nicola Appleton.
Yeah. They just came swanning in, sold them some golf clubs.
Was he properly like, does he actually walk like that? He comes in?
Yeah. I think he was wearing the sort of the proper Parker coat or whatever. Up to the top.
That was
peak Oasis. That would have been. Well, peakish Oasis, sort of early noughties.
You wouldn't have thought Liam Gallagher back then was a golf player, would you?
Why was he in American Golf, Freeport, Braintree?
Exactly. Of all the places he could be, I can't imagine him on a golf course. Anyway, so a slightly strange end to the show. Anything else to mention?
I don't know if I have got anything else to mention.
That's all right, mate. You don't have to. It's fine. Okay, well, that's been a rare two-man show. I hope you enjoyed it. It's coming up to an hour now, so we'll bid you adieu and get on with our day. Just a reminder to support our sponsors, obviously use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery on all the excellent clobber. I should be using their beard trimmer in due course. I've got a bit of growth on me at the moment. Also, obviously, support our other sponsor, Ginger Pickle, if you need help with your digital ads, your Google marketing, all that kind of stuff. SEO, not CEO, as dear old Roscoe keeps calling it. Get involved with them, Tony Southgate and the boys at Ginger Pickle, the way to go. And also, if you'd like to buy yourself some KOA merch, I'm just sporting the best-selling KOA hoodie. Very comfy. And there's the colour contrast mug there from Stu. Always get the product placement in. You can find links on our various social medias to the KOA store. Right then, friends. Things are going rather well, aren't they? 6 wins from 7 games as we head into the weekend. Best form side in Europe. Better even than Manchester City. Friends, if you're going to the game, enjoy it. If you see the boys there, do say hello. If you're not, follow it with them. And we'll be back next week to break it all down and speak to you once again. Have a good one.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.